Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden years. Mark Levonier, your host for an hour of comedy. Later on, it's the game show Can You Top This from 1942. But first, The Henry Morgan Show, an ABC episode from March 5th, 1947.
The Henry Morgan Show? Of Eversharp Chic Injector Razors and Blades brings you the Henry Morgan Show, featuring Bernie Green and his orchestra and a few surprises.
Good evening, anybody. Here's Morgan. Thank you very much. Recently, as Fred Allen remarked, the State Department has started sending radio broadcasts to Russia. They probably call the program the Samovar Hour. Samovar best friends are Russians. But I wonder what would happen if we broadcast to Russia the kind of stuff we allow our own natives to hear. We take you now to Moscow to hear two Russians talking after they've heard a couple of hours of typical American broadcasting.
Hello, Comrade Morgan. You heard maybe the American broadcast today?
I heard. First, I listened to a program called, quote, Life. Given the proper economic conditions, of course, can be beautiful. Lovely. So sad. Just like Chekhov.
Ah, you have a soul, my friend.
True.
Tell me, Comrade Morgan. This is something which confidentially I'm not following. What is reason for the other wife of John?
Frankly, I don't know. Helps maybe to relieve the monogamy. You know, Americans. I heard other programs, too. Good Russian programs. Rubles or nothing. Red Skelton. Say, did you heard we are broadcasting to United States?
Oh, yes. Russia has put together program especially to make happy listeners in America.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Russia soon will be sending us broadcasts. And here in the studio is Comrade Charny Hevudo with his idea of what a broadcast from the USSR might sound like. Comrade?
Приезжаю из Алабамы, из бани на мой колени. Пойду в Челуизиане, свидеть моей любви. И целый ночь сильнее дождь, погода теперь сухая. Сольнее, жарко заморозиво, Сузанья, ты не плачь. О, Сузанечка, а ты не плачь при мне. Приезжаю из Алабамы, из бани на мой колени. О, Сузанечка, а ты не плачь при мне. Эй, приезжаю из Алабамы, из бани на мой колени. Эй!
Где олень и антилюпа играл, где редко услышано обескураживающий слов. Небеся не покрыты тучами, облачный, мрачный, нахмурный целый день. Большие светлые, среди сердцей у всех, а всех широкую и большой. Сильнице сею в чеках. Сильнице сею в чеках. Похоже на дуэль. Сильнице сею в чеках. Поменяйте мне. Останьте пушки. Сильнице сею в
Ladies and gentlemen, a brand new idea that has never been done in radio before.
Us, the people, speak.
Our first guests on Us, the People, are a couple who write all those letters that you read in advertisements. The letters are from customers who buy a product and then write to the manufacturer an unsolicited testimonial. Now, nobody asks them to write in. They just like to, I guess. Isn't that so,
RGM is the name of Peoria.
Is that your name?
Well, you don't need no name in this rocket club. Just initials. RGM, that's me.
You write unsolicited testimonials?
Yeah. Recently, I wrote one, made all the papers. Went something like this. Quote, in an unsolicited testimonial, RGM of Peoria writes, I have been using Ostermuller's self-wetting pencil points for 80 years, and I hope to be 100. Signed, RGM Peoria.
Say, that's a dinger. Tell me, did you ever do any magazine writing?
Oh, sure, yes. I got into 40 magazines with this baby. Quote, before I start eating yeast, I'd never eaten yeast. But now I eat 6 cakes a day and I still got all my own teeth. Signed, RGM, Peoria.
Tell me something. You said in your first testimonial that you're 80 years old. Gee, you don't look it.
Literary license. I'm all ages. Here's an example of my adolescent work, which got into thousands of comic books. Quote, Master RGM of Tehachapi writes, I sure love to eat Bang breakfast cereal. I mix up a bowl of Bang with cream and sugar. I get a Bang out of it. My old man mixes his with scotch and he goes right through the ceiling.
Thank you very much, Mr. RGM. And now let's hear from your wife, Mrs. RGM, a man... You also write unsolicited testimonials?
Yes. Yes, I take care of the woman's angle, like this one, which you may have seen in the subways. Quote says, Mrs. RGM of Woonsocket says, I simply adore Hacking's cough syrup. And I always give it to my children, A and B.
Tell me, what are your plans for the future, Mrs. M?
Well, you see, I want to get out of unsolicited into solicited. Yeah, it pays off. I'd like to be in one of them ads, you know, where I'm a model and I play on the beach with my 2 kids. And then in the next picture, we stand around brushing our teeth.
I see. And you, Mr. M, what's your ambition?
Well, I want to be the guy who jumps from a plane 5 miles before opening his parachute, drives a racing car 100 miles an hour with 2 wrecks, breaks in a wild Bronco in 8 seconds, goes over Niagara Falls in a barrel, and when he's all pooped and somebody says, what do you want? He says, give me a camel.
Thank you both. And now, here is a solicited testimonial.
I bought me a ever sharp check injector razor. Oh, it must be now, about 2 weeks ago.
Is that so?
Yep. I still got her, too. Cost me $1.25 with 20 blades.
Well, that's what it costs everybody.
I know. I ain't shaved with it yet, though.
Why not?
Well, I got a problem. Eversharp changes blades automatically, you know, like you say. But I always cut my fingers anyway.
How do you do that, for goodness sake? Well, every... I mean...
Well...
It's a little hard to remember.
Well, every night, I take my ever-sharp razor, see, and push-pull, quick-quick, and change the blade. So far, so good. Then I got this old used blade, you see.
Yes?
Well, every time I go to pick that up, I cut my finger again. Quite a problem.
Look, Pops, why don't you just shoot the used one right from the razor into the trash can or somewhere? That way you never touch the blade at all.
Oh, it's more fun trying to figure out how to pick it up. I got nothing to do nights anyway. Besides, I intend keeping this beard I got.
What did you say your name was, by the way?
RGM of Peoria.
Well, Eversharp does pay me occasionally. And I bought a new suit the other day, finally. They've been scarce. And I had to go to a very elegant establishment and pay a lot of money. It bothered me a little, the way they treated me. And in the following scene, I play the salesman because, on account of what happened to me, I'm too sorry for myself to play the customer.
This is one of the better shops, and they don't like to cater to just anybody. Oh, here's a customer. Now he's going up to the salesman. I believe he's actually got the nerve to speak to him.
I'd like to see some suits, please.
You'll just step outside. You can see perfectly well through the window.
No, I mean I'd like to buy a suit. Something like the one I got on.
Where did you get that, may I ask? Make it yourself?
Why, what's wrong with it? It's good material, army surplus.
Yes, I can still see the marks of the tent poles.
I want a suit.
Very well. Here's one with arm-length sleeves, split sleeves, and hand-picked lint. 100% wool.
Is it warm?
Kept the sheep warm.
Well, could I try on the pants?
Try on the pants? Where do you think you are, in a locker room? Oh, fitter.
Yes, Mr. Morgan, yes.
Fellow wants to be measured.
Well, just wait till I get my tape measure.
Don't bother with that. It's nobody we know. He's just looking.
Oh, no. No, honest. I'm going to buy a suit. I got money. Look, I got a roll could choke a horse.
Dear fellow, if that's your game, I suggest you try the rodeo.
Gee, these pants look awfully roomy. You could get two people in them.
Your dear fellow, that's entirely up to you.
And I'm not so sure about this pattern. I was kind of thinking of a herringbone.
How about a pinstripe?
Well, I was kind of thinking about a herringbone.
Yes? Well, you're not running this shop. You think you can dominate our policy, then, by George, you've got another thing coming.
But my wife don't like pinstripes. No, you got to suggest something else.
I suggest a divorce.
Oh, no, no, no. She's really a very nice little woman. I mean, except she...
My friend, I'm not John J. Anthony. Have no time to listen to prattle about your domestic affairs. Do you want the suit or don't you?
Oh, sure, you bet. It's a beauty. I'll pay you now and you can send it when it's ready.
Send it? Do you think we have nothing to do but run errands for you?
No, no, no. I'll pick it up. I mean, it's right on my way to work. And when can I have it?
About May 4th, 1952.
1952? Why, I may be dead by then.
Really? Well, in that case, you'll want something darker, won't you?
Earlier, we took you to Russia. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we take pleasure in switching you to France, where the next voice you hear will be Monsieur Henri de la Morgan, broadcasting the prize fights direct from the ringside of the Paris Square Garden. Henri de la Morgan.
Bonsoir, messieurs, mesdames. Here I am by the side of the ring at the championship fight for the suede gloves. Sitting at the side of the ring are some very fascinating and exciting people. There are also some men. Over there sits the gorgeous Muriel Montparnasse de la Roque. She is wearing, how shall I say, very little. Next to her is her husband, the famous ambassador of goodwill to Indochina. Since that country has no goodwill for France, the monsieur is with us tonight. On the other side from Madame de la Roque sits her boyfriend, Jacques de la Raoul, famous throughout France as a boyfriend. Here comes the first gorgeous fighter, Valentin Sherry. He's coming in the ring together with his manager, his trainer, his manicurist, and his two gamblers. In case anything goes wrong with the fight, they're in charge of fixing it. Valentin is wearing gorgeous purple tights trimmed with Chartreuse ruffles. Yes, here comes the other gorgeous gladiator, Monsieur Jean Sautin. Both fighters are now taking their last manicure. The fight is about to begin, and all eyes are focused on Madame de la Roque. She is gorgeous. Now the two fighters are in the center of the ring. Monsieur Sautin has taken off his bathrobe. Sacrebleu! Something terrible has occurred. His trunks are brown. Monsieur Sherry is wearing purples. They clash. Madame de la Roque is carried away. She kissed her boyfriend. Her husband is infuriated. He hits the boyfriend for nothing. The boyfriend is carried away. The two fighters come to the center of the ring. They eye each other. They get bored with this. So they eye Madame de la Roque. She's gorgeous. The fighters dance around the ring. What grace, what beauty. The referee tried to break it up, but they do not wish to dance with him. The crowd give the referee the boo. Oh, the first round come to an end. Monsieur Sherry, Monsieur Sautin go back to their corner. The manager give them what to drink. Sautern, he drinks Sherry. Sherry, he drinks Sautern. Beautiful sentiment. Monsieur Sherry, he gives to his friend such a large clout on the gorgeous puss. Oh, I cannot look on this. Monsieur Sautern is on the floor, getting his trunks all full of dirtiness. It's a shame for France. The crowd, she stand up and give such a terrible boo. The referee, she stop the fight. It's too ugly. The fight is over. Vive la France. Good night.
Hello?
Hello, Hortense. This is Gerard.
Hello, Gerard. This is Hortense.
Gee, it's nice hearing your voice, pussy face. What are you doing?
I'm writing in my diary.
Oh.
I'm up to last Friday when we went dancing.
It was nice dancing together, wasn't it?
Yeah. Gerard, how do you spell clumsy?
Hortense, you're writing in your diary that I'm clumsy?
Well, Gerard, you're not exactly Fred Astaire.
Well, I'm not Ginger Rogers either, so what's that got to do with it?
Honest, Gerard. I wish you'd take dancing lessons with Arthur Murray.
Nah, I feel silly dancing with a man. Besides, dancing isn't the most important thing in the world. Making a good impression isn't the most important thing in the world.
Then what is?
The struggle for existence.
Gee, Gerard, you're deep. You're the deepest fella I ever knew.
Well, Hortense, I can't help the way I am. I just don't think like other fellas.
You certainly don't. You don't even look like other fellas.
You understand me, Hortense.
Oh, you must have been a very interesting child, Gerard. I mean, when you were a child.
Yeah, I got a picture of me in my family album when I was 3 years old. And I looked very mature.
You did, Gerard?
Yeah, of course. The glasses helped. Would you like to come over and see my family album tonight, Hortense?
I acquiesce.
Well, it looks like Hortense is stuck.
There's nothing more deadly than a family album. And the worst part of it is that people insist on showing the family album to totally peace-loving visitors at the first lull in the conversation. For instance, let's see what happens to this married couple visiting some friends of theirs.
Come on, Henry, ring the bell.
Not me. It was your idea.
Well, what could I say? They invited us.
You could have told them we were typhoid carriers.
Now, what have you got against Gloria and George? So George is a little uncouth when he's drunk. Everybody's got the right to drink.
With George, it's more than a right. It's his whole philosophy.
Oh, nonsense, dear. George has a good heart.
Sometimes I wish he had a bad one.
Henry, ring the bell. Well, they must be in. I hear noises inside.
Probably George rolling down the stairs again.
I'll ring again.
George, it's Henry and Ruth at the door.
Well, give them some old clothes and send them away.
Now, don't be difficult. They're waiting.
Do you think a flower pot might discourage them?
Answer the door or I'll smash this bottle of scotch.
Okay. Nice of you to come.
Nice of you to ask us.
Yeah. You want to sit down or something?
Might as well, now that we're here.
Yes, do sit down.
Think we ought to take our coats off first?
That would be nice.
You're looking very well, Gloria. Not so,
fat?
Ruth, I've never seen you look better, really.
Oh, nonsense. I look a sight, don't I now?
Well, how about a drink, everybody?
Great idea. Certainly could use a drink. What's new, George?
Nothing much. What's new with you?
Oh, nothing at all. Nothing.
Well, here's luck down the hatch.
George.
What's the matter?
Give somebody else a drink.
Huh? Sorry. Well, it's nice to have a social drink now and then. You know, my whole philosophy is...
I know.
Well, I'm certainly glad we came.
Yeah, it's been nice having you.
George, have you seen the latest snapshots of our little boy?
No.
Oh, they're very cute. Would you like to see them?
Yeah. Love to.
Good. I'll get the family album. All our pictures are in it. It goes way back to when I was a little girl, quite a while ago.
I know.
Yes. Oh, here's something. An old flame of George's. She was so two-faced.
Well, the one in the picture looks pretty good. What happened, George?
Well, Gloria came along. Her family had money. And... Oh, well.
Who's this, Gloria?
Oh, that's George at the beach. He's lifting a 200-pound weight over his head. A second later, it fell right on top of him. Hurt him bad.
You got a picture of that?
That's George. He was always such a show-off.
Yeah? About what?
Oh, here's one you'll like. It's a group picture of all my relatives. Look at them all standing there, staring at the camera.
Oh, that reminds me. Ruth, did you feed the dog this evening?
Pictures of Danny. Here's one where he's smiling. And here's one where he's waving. He's been waving since he was 4 months.
Anne must be tired, huh?
Here's another one where he's smiling. Aw, here he's trying to climb out of his playpen. Isn't that adorable?
Yeah.
Here's one when he was 3 in the carriage. Isn't that adorable?
Say, you folks don't mind if I whisper something to my wife a moment, do you?
No, go right ahead.
Say, Ruth, I have an idea. Whisper, please. Sorry, folks. Say, how would you like to see some pictures of our kid?
Well, it's getting late.
Yeah, well,
good night.
Morgan will be on the same corner in front of the cigar store if I live with his cold again next week at the same time.
This is Charles Irving saying goodnight for Evershaw. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
The Henry Morgan Show, on Tuned to Yesterday from March 5th, 1947, on ABC. His program, in a half-hour format, had been on the air for about 3 years at that point, drawing a respectable 8.2 million listeners to their sets Wednesday nights at 10:30, though very far behind the top comedy programs of the day, tied with 30.2 million listeners, Bob Hope and Fibber McGee and Molly. This is an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for one of radio's more unique comedy shows. It's Can You Top This? From April 21st, 1942 on NBC.
Can you top this? Why did the chicken cross the road? That was no chicken. That was my wife.
Can you top that, Harry Hirschfield?
Aye.
Can you, Senator Ford?
I might.
And you, Joe Lawrie Jr.?
Maybe.
Those expedient exclamations introduce the pint-sized author comedian, Joe Lawrie Jr., the popular after-dinner speaker and current topic humorist, Senator Ford, and the well-known columnist, cartoonist, and after-dinner speaker, Harry Hirschfield. These effervescent emers of entertainment bring you another session of Can You Top This? With the best wishes of Kirkman Soap Flakes. And here's that enchanting exponent of elegant English, Rod Jabbar.
Good evening. By this time, I'm sure you all know that the top rule of Can You Top This is keep them laughing. Can You Top This is unrehearsed and spontaneous. Anybody can send in a joke. If your joke is read on this program by the well-known actor and storyteller, Pete O'Donnell, you are credited with $11. Then each of our three gag specialists, Harry Hirschfield, Joe Lawrie Jr., and Senator Ford, who have not heard your joke until Pete O'Donnell tells it, gets a chance to top it with another joke on the same subject. Every time your joke is topped, your credit is chopped by $2. If all three jokes is top you, Kirkman sends you $5 and a joke book. And everyone whose joke is told by Pete O'Donnell gets a big gift package of 6 Kirkman soap products. Laughs are registered on the Kirkman laugh meter in full view of the studio audience, and in all cases, the decision of our judges is final. All right, gentlemen, are you ready?
Ready.
That's fine. The first subject comes from John Ratcliffe of Fall River, Massachusetts. And the subject is restaurant or restaurants. Eating places, Joe, you know.
Yes.
Beanery. Yeah.
Now I know.
Peter Dow, will you read Mr. Ratcliffe's story, please?
Well, Pat and Mike, who had just come to this country, went into a restaurant one day. And on the table was a big jar of horseradish. So Mike said,
I wonder what in the world that white stuff is there in the little pot.
Oh, he said, well, he said, why don't you taste it and see?
So Mike took a big spoonful of the horseradish and he put it in his mouth. And, of course, the tears came streaming out of his eyes. Like this. Pat says,
what are you crying about, Mike?
He said, I was just thinking about me poor old grandfather who was hanged in Ireland. He said, here, you taste the stuff.
So Pat put the spoon in, he got a big mouthful of this stuff, and of course he started coughing and choking and the tears coming down his face. So Mike said,
what are you crying about now, Pat?
He said, I was thinking it's just too bad you wasn't hanged with your grandfather.
That joke got 100 on the Kirkman laugh meter. 100 is the amount. The subject is restaurant or restaurants, and I see that Harry Hirschfield had his hand up first.
Well, this is a gag in two parts. I can use it two parts. Two Scotchmen went into a restaurant. Before they went in, they agreed not to tip the hat check girl, get the cheapest meal. And when they sat down, they noticed that Sandy was buttering the bread on both sides. And the waiters were looking at it, and the boss was looking. It was getting embarrassing. And finally, the other Scotchman says, Sandy, I never saw that before. What's the idea of buttering the bread on both sides? And he says, don't you think my lower lip likes butter, too? Well, there's another part. So going out to the hat check girl, they got the stuff, and as they started out, he says, Sandy, you said you wouldn't give any tip. He says, you gave her 10 cents. I saw you give her, get it back. He says, shh, Look at the coat she gave me.
That was, you tied Mr. Ratcliffe's 100, but you did not top it, Harry.
And both of them?
No, the first one. Oh, yours is the first half. That was 74 3/4 on the first half. But the second half got 100. It tied Mr. Ratcliffe. It didn't top. He still holds his own, still has $11. And Joe Laurie has his hand up second.
Well, this one is just making the rounds lately. It's about the refugee that came to this country, didn't have any friends, didn't know the language. He got hungry, he went into a restaurant. He waited around, he didn't know what to ask for, didn't know anything about English, so he looked at a man, and the man next to him says, bean soup, and he got bean soup. So he says, bean soup. The fellow brought him bean soup. He says, I got to remember that, bean soup. So that night he went in for supper. He says, bean soup. So they gave him bean soup. This kept on for 3 weeks. That's all he knew, bean soup, and he got a little tired of bean soup. So he says, well, I'll wait for another fellow to order something. So a fellow next to him ordered a ham sandwich. So he says, a ham sandwich. So the fellow says, how do you have it, buddy? White or rye? So he looks up and says, bean soup.
That was very good, Joe. You got 80 on the Kirkman laugh meter. However, it didn't top Mr. Ratcliffe's 100, and so he still holds his own. He still has $11. Senator Ford, are you in this round?
Yeah.
You know, we're doing this without a beard, you know.
Well, with or without a beard, I'm going to tell this one. Two newspaper reporters met. One was a bright, alert sort of a fellow and quite a kidder. And the other fellow was, he was what is known as a news moocher. He was very lazy and used to go around and get news the easiest way. So he said to the brighter fellow, he said, anything doing around the neighborhood? And the bright fellow said, yeah, I just got a report that a fellow choked down in a restaurant down the street here. And the other fellow says, yeah? He says, give me the lowdown. How did he choke? So the first fellow said, well, he was eating some horse meat and somebody hollered, whoa.
Senator, that was 100 on the Kirkman laugh meter. That also tied Mr. Ratcliffe's 100.
That one wore a beard, didn't it, Joe?
However, since none of you which has... that extra laugh, ladies and gentlemen,
you're
is
not
that...
not wearing a
that,
beard, but the jokes are.
Peter Donald is sporting a beard tonight. Not at all unbecoming, either.
And a sporty beard.
Sporty beard, yes. That also accounts for Mr. Hirschfield's remark about beard. Or as Joe says, beaver. Well, since none of you wits has topped Mr. Ratcliffe's 100, we send Mr. Ratcliffe $11 on that big Kirkman gift package. This next subject should be dear to you gentlemen's heart. It's wives.
Wives.
You needn't look pained, Senator. I know you have a lovely and charming wife, and as I said before, she's a good cook. It comes from Roy Goff of Burlington, New Jersey. Will you read Mr. Goff's story, please, Peter?
Well, a husband called the Bureau of Missing Persons, and he told them that his wife was missing. Asked them to please look for her. And a few days later, the Bureau phoned the husband that they had found a woman who answered the description of his wife. So the guy was very relieved. He said, oh, I'm so glad to hear that you found her. He said, what did she have to say? And they said, oh, she hasn't said a word. He says, brother, that's not my wife.
That was 32 of the Kirkman laugh meter. And I might add the thing, for once the mug didn't get any more than 32.
I think he shaves in the morning.
Yes, I see. Well, the Kirkman laugh meter gave that story 32. The subject is wives, gentlemen. Well, Senator Ford had his hand right up.
Yeah, I know all about wives. Well, anyway...
No, you don't.
Sitzi Baumwartles, when his first wife departed this mundane sphere for happier climes, Sitzi shook his head very sadly and said, you know, Ella was a fine wife. She was always so thoughtful. Whenever we got into a fight, she always hit me on the head with the soft end of the broom.
Well, Senator, that might... This might... This might surprise you, Senator, but you topped Mr. Goff. You've got 36. 36. 36 in the Kirkman Laugh Meter. You topped him by four, and so we chop away $2, giving him now $9. And Joe Lurie had his hand up second, Harry.
Well, a fellow's wife didn't feel very well, so he called the doctor. And the doctor went in to examine her. When he come out, he says, what is it, doctor? What would you advise me to do? He says, well, he says, I'd advise you to send it to a warmer climate. He says, oh, I haven't got the heart to do it, doctor, but if you'll do the job, there's an axe behind the door.
61 in the Kirkman Laugh Meter, Joe. 61, definitely top Mr. Hoffman. 32, and so we chop away $2 more, giving him now $7 and giving us now Harry Hirschfield.
I got an eepsy peepsy. A woman went on, she was one of these fat mamas, and she went on a diet. She became one of those martyrs. You know, everybody had to suffer along with her. She told everybody she was dieting and dieting. One day they caught her in a restaurant, and she had double orders of everything, doubled herring and doubled this and doubled that. Everything double, a tremendous meal. Somebody said, I thought you were on a diet. She says, no wife should diet. I looked up the statistics. And you know what the statistics show? That nearly every woman who dieted to please her husband found out that he ran away with a fat woman anyhow.
$110 in the Kirkman Laugh Meter, Harry. $110. Well, since all of you wits have topped Mr. Goff's 32, we send Mr. Goff a joke book. But $5 for sending in the story and that big Kirkman gift package.
And well, a hair from Peter's beard.
Hair from Peter's beard, yes. Well, we're snip and tuck tonight. One for the customers and one for you, boy. Let's see how we go from here on in. This next subject comes from Mrs. Annie E. Smith of Bremo Bluff, Virginia. And the subject is also dear to your heart. Wages, gentlemen. Wages.
Oh, I thought you said
remuneration,
wages.
Remuneration, said I. Yeah. Peter Donald, will you read Mrs. Smith's story, please?
Well, it was a very, very timid little guy named Brown, and for a long time he wanted to ask his boss for a raise. And every morning he'd say, well, I'm going to ask him today. Now, no fooling. I'm going to get up and I'm going to tell him something. I'm going to tell him. And just then the boss would come along and the guy would get all fright and he'd sit down and wouldn't say a word. So one morning, just as the boss came along, the fellow sitting next to Brown said, hey, Brown, why don't you ask the boss what you said you were going to ask him? Go ahead. So the boss came over. He said, yes, Brown, ask me what? He said, oh, well, boss, says, look here. I want more money or else. The boss said, or else what? He said, or else I'll work for what I'm getting now.
That story got 71 in the Kirkman Laugh Meter. 71 is the amount. The subject is wages, and Joe Lurie Jr. had his hand up first.
Mamie and Aggie met. And Aggie says, hello, Mame. Says, are you still working down a beauty parlor? He says, no, I'm not. He says, gee, you made some swell wages there, too, didn't you? She says, there's some tips. She says, what'd you leave for? She said, I didn't leave. They fired me. So what'd they fire you for, Mamie? She says, well, I'll tell you. Some dame came in one day, and she wanted an egg shampoo. So I gave her the egg shampoo. And I guess I didn't rinse her hair very well, because when she walked home in the sun, an omelet broke out on her head.
81, Joe, on the Kirkman Laugh Meter. 81, tops Mrs. Smith, 71. So we chop away $2. He now has $9. And Harry Herschel had his hand up second.
Pincus met a lawyer for the first time. It's socially. So socially, he said to him at the club, he says, how does the international situation look? The lawyer said, very serious. And he sent him a bill for his fee, which was his wages, for $25 for advice. He was awful sore about it. Next day, he meets him again, and he says, is Buffalo near Canada? The fellow said, it is. So he sent him again a bill for $25. The next day, he met him, and he said, listen. He said, it looks like rain, but remember, I'm telling you, not asking you.
$114 in the Kirkman Laugh Meter.
$114,
yes. You chop Mr. Smith, 71, so he chop away $2 more, giving her now $7.
Yeah, there are all kinds of, you know, incomes, for example, wages, fees, and honorariums. Honorarium is the same as wages, only more so. Well, anyway, there was a fellow by the name of Ossie Tupergills
who was stuck on Screwball Jake's daughter, Elviry. So he went around to Jake's home one night to talk over the possibilities of taking a trip o'er the seas of matrimony. So Jake said, what is the money situation with you come Saturday payday? Or in other words, what is your weekly stipend? So Ossie said, I don't know what you're talking about, but I got a great future. He said, I'm learning to be an electrician for an entomologist. So Jake said, if I remember right, an entomologist is a guy who collects bugs. So Ossie said, that's right. So Jake said, well, what does an electrician for an entomologist do? So Ossie said, I'm learning to put the electric light bulbs in lightning bugs.
90 on the Kirkman left meter, Senator. Without the aid of the flower, it was 92. That topped Mr. Smith's 71, so we chop away another $2.
And since all of you wits have topped Mrs. Smith, we send Mrs. Smith a joke book. Plus $5 for sending in the story in that big Kirkman gift package.
Well, you're doing very well tonight, gentlemen. Exceptionally well. There's another subject I know you know something about, too. The theater.
What's happened to it?
Joe, don't you often wonder about your part of it?
Yes, I do.
Well, this
and
comes
dream
from,
about it.
You dream about it, I see. This comes from Mrs. Irene Dobray of Newark, New Jersey. And as I said, the subject is the theater. Peter Dowell, will you read Mrs. Dobray's story, please?
Well, it seems that Jake Ginsburg had never been to the theater in all his life. He's just an easygoing guy. He didn't like to go out much. So one night, sitting around the house, and his wife was looking at him, and finally she says, hey, Jake, she says, hey. She says, you know, I'm ashamed of you. She says, honest to goodness, she says, you sit around here every night like a big meatball. She says, I'm tired of looking at you. She says, for goodness sakes, don't be a no-good all your life. Why don't you go out to the theater at night and get a little culture, see the acting and everything.
He says, all right, don't holler, so I'll go to the theater.
So he goes down to a theater to see a musical comedy, and of course he gets inside, and he thought it was wonderful. Oh, he walked around the lobby, and he looked at all the chandeliers and the beautiful plush seats and all those fancy ushers, you know, saying, step across the mezzanine seats, I have a ticket from Venice.
He says, thank you, Admiral, I'll sit down right here.
So he sits down, and in a couple of minutes, the orchestra comes out, and they play the overture to the show. And he applauds at the end of the overture. And as soon as they finish playing the overture and the play starts, he gets up and he goes home. So he gets home and his wife, she says, hey. She says, what's the matter, Poppy? You're home so early. What's the matter? You didn't like the performance, the show? You didn't have a good time?
She says, oh, I had a wonderful time. Oy, oy, oy. Oh, he says, did I enjoy? He says, everything was wonderful. Everything was a number one ipsy-pipsies. Wonderful. He says, listen, he says, the theater was beautiful and the lights were wonderful and the music was gorgeous. And he says, then all of a sudden, the curtain went up and people came out and they started talking and it was none of my business, so I got up and went home.
Went to the top of the Kirkman Laugh Meter. The top is 130, gentlemen.
We go for the ride.
130, not necessarily for the ride. If all of you, all three of you gentlemen can get 130, you know, Kirk will be glad to send you some products.
Delighted. That's worthwhile.
Yeah, so you can really try out. Harry Hirschfield put his hand up first.
I like this dialogue. Two women are talking, and one says, my son is the biggest scenario writer in Hollywood. Such a scenario, he's the biggest. And she says, and your son? She says, my son is a commentator in front of a burlesque theater.
That's the ride.
Oh, no soap.
Well,
another gag.
That was 30, if you want
to. No, nope. Let's pass it on.
You can tell another one if you wish, Harry. I have a minute here. Well, that was 30. It didn't
I
top.
I should kill myself Dobray's these prices.
It didn't top Mrs. Dobray's 130, so she still holds her own naturally, $11. Joe Lurie had his hand up second.
I always liked the one about the old fella in the moving picture house, and he's down front, and he's looking around. He's making people get up, and they're looking around, and he lights matches, and finally the usher comes down. He says, what's the idea? What's the matter? What'd you do? Lose something? He says, yes, I lost a Carmel. He says, out of my mouth fell a Carmel. He says, well, all this fuss for a Carmel? He says, yes, but my teeth were in it.
Well, Joe,
good day.
Joe, you also hit the top of the Kirkman last meter. You tied Mrs. Dobray's 130. She still holds her own, though, with $11. Senator Ford, you're scratching your cranium there. Are you picking up another 130 story for
us? Well, no, I was at a theatrical party the other night, and I told one that I think fits in here all right. You know, the first show I ever saw was a railroad melodrama called The Brakeman's Daughter or Fun in a Signal Tower. although I was a mere stripling at the time, I still retain all the scenes very vividly, especially the last act. That was a Lulu. It was a dark night. There was a terrible storm. The lightning flashed. The thunder roared. And the fast express was approaching a railroad bridge when the darn broke. You have to say darn. You can't say the other word on the radio, you see. Well, the darn broke. The water cascaded down in torrents and washed away the railroad bridge. There was the fast express approaching, roaring toward the railroad bridge that was washed out with its human cargo of 90 souls and as many heels. And there was the railroad bridge washed away, the signal tower gone, no lanterns, in fact, nothing with which to signal the train, when out of the darkness dashed the brakeman's daughter. She rushed down to the track and waved the clothespin. The train approached. The engineer saw the clothespin in the beam of his headlight and stopped the train. Thus, the fast thinking of the brakeman's daughter averted a catastrophe. For every engineer knows that a clothespin is a sign of washout on the line.
Well, Senator,
I got mine. I just thought of it. Just thought of it.
That, Senator, almost blew the top off the Kirkman last meter.
It's too late for mine.
130, if it isn't too long, it's not too
no.
late. No. The one, this fellow,
a son said to his father, he says, I'm an actor, father. So the father decided to go to all his friends. They all bought tickets to see the show. When they came there was his son, a super, holding a gun. First act goes by, he doesn't do a thing. Second act, he says, probably the second act, boys, he'll probably do something. Second act, he's still super holding the gun. Still he doesn't. He says it must be the third act. Third act, he's still holding the gun. The curtain is just about getting done. The father hollers out, Sam, if they won't let you do anything, at least shoot off the gun.
Very good, Harry.
The first one.
Well, that was good.
No.
The two of them gave you 130.
All right.
Well, for the act.
Since none of you wits has topped Mrs. Dobray, we send her $11 in that big Kirkman gift package. Well, gentlemen, it's time for the clown table discussion.
We've been thinking of humor and stuff like that, you know. You know, most humor is about women. Marriage, matrimonial stuff, that's the biggest...
Matrimony isn't a joke either, you know that.
And peculiarly, it isn't professional humor. It isn't professional humor that talks about marriage and the institution of marriage. It's the people themselves that are married that kid this institution called marriage.
Yeah, institution. That's what it is. But who wants to live in an institution all his life?
You know, one of the gags of marriage that's one of the famous ones is the girl saying to the fellow, I wouldn't marry you if you were the last man on earth. He said, listen, if I was the last man on earth, you wouldn't have to.
I like the one about the servant girl that applies for a job, and she says she's a good cook. And the woman says, do you know anything about stews? She says, I should. I married one.
Well, that stew thing kind of reminds me of one of the old babies has a beard longer than Peter's here. It's the one about the married man who used to get plastered so he'd see double and feel single.
not a bad idea at that.
One of the famous married gags, as the fellow said, was that Bill's wife out with him last night? He says, no, he don't go out with married women.
I love the one the fella says, I wish the government starts an aluminum drive again so I could turn in the pot I married.
Well, I suppose it's time for me to love one, too. You know, everybody, I love this one, I like that one. One fella said to another, what would we be without women? The other fella said about $5,000 a year better off.
And remember the wife arguing with the husband? She says, you don't know what love is. He says, yes, I do. That's something the minister chucked in with honor and obey.
I love the one about the woman says, how are you getting along with your husband? She says, oh, I got him eaten out of my hand. He says, ain't that great? It saves washing dishes, don't it?
Well, gentlemen, I'm afraid that's all we have time for tonight in the clown table discussion, and thank you. And may I remind everyone listening in that you can match wits with our three joke specialists by sending in one or more jokes to Can You Top This in care of WOR New York. Join us again next week, same time, same gang. Other jokes, some new, some old. Until then, we remain yours for bigger and better laughs.
Edward Hastings Ford.
Harry Herschel Hirschfield.
Joe, no middle name, Laurie Jr.
Beaver Donald.
And G. Roger Bauer.
Can You Top This? On Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC episode from April 21st, 1942. And that wraps it up for this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.